Hey guys, don't forget the 2023 Street Cop Training Conference, Nashville, Tennessee, April 23rd through the 28th. You do not want to miss this. So far, guest speakers, Rob O'Neill, the Navy SEAL that was responsible for killing Osama bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, U.S. Marine, Medal of Honor recipient, jumping on an IED to protect his platoon. Fox News host Tommy Lahren returns for 2023. Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff Mark Lamb, Sheriff David Clark, and more to come. You don't want to miss this event. We additionally have 20 of the country's top law enforcement educators giving you the best experience of your life. You will leave this event knowing more about your job and how to be proficient at the things you do, hands down, any other event that you'll ever attend. I personally guarantee it. Don't miss out. There's a room code at streetcop.com for our room block and room code at the Gaylord at Opry is where the event's taking place. Don't miss out on a discounted rate. The rate is from Sunday to Thursday. Put that in and find yourselves at a half-price room. Split it with a friend, but make sure you get there. You don't want to miss this event. It is going to be that good. If you trust me and you trust Street Cop, trust that you will leave there feeling like you've had an experience of a lifetime.
You training to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. Your host, founder, and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and today with me back again is Dr. Todd Langus and Rob Swayze, retired law enforcement professionals, supervisors from California. And we went through a lot of interesting stuff. I think this episode is going to be excellent again as we start to unlock and unpack some of the messages we've received from people in some of these bigger metropolitan cities and what it's like to work there. Recently, I was posting a lot of stuff. I know we're going to get to mental health, but on our Instagram, we've been discussing, a lot of people were submitting messages to us about the toxic work environments that they're up against in some of these larger metropolitan cities. You know, essentially, that's where it seems to be the biggest problem. And, you know, actually, one of them, it looks like they're actually investigating, from what we understand, at Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C., because of the interference that was claimed in a message that was sent to us. I'm actually thrilled. I'm actually excited that they're actually going to look into it. And I kind of figured out, I'm like, where did this get from here to there to maybe sparking some kind of investigation? And people tagged Metropolitan Police Department, the mayor of the city, all this Fox News, they were tagging it in the Instagram post. So I hope they take it and run with it because I think it really needs to be investigated. I think it's absolute insanity. And people say, well, you got to watch what you say. Really? Because I got to tell you, MPD is not sending anybody my training ever.
Yeah.
And if we don't start addressing these topics, and one of the topics was that this councilman, this rogue councilman, whether it's true or not, it needs to be investigated if there's any claim of it. So I'm not saying that it's true or not, but I'm certainly glad there's going to be an investigation. This councilman interferes regularly with police investigations and is not arrested. If you try to interfere back and stop that person, there is repercussions from the internal side, namely the chief's office, and the punishment is some kind of transfer of assignment or away from your district. I don't know what it is, but whether or not it's true, I'm not advocating that it's true or not, just definitely needs to be investigated for sure.
Yeah. You know, we're really at a place where we do need oversight politically. And, you know, one of the things is that's one of the problems we kind of hit on it last time was about these administrators that are more worried about their job because they're an at-will employee, that they're not going to step in and do anything. And I think that it's incumbent on our county sheriffs that are elected officials, and even if it's a joint task force, to start investigating some of these things. And, you know, and unfortunately, you know, there's misconduct, if you will, or corruption, you know, at high levels, especially nowadays more than ever. Unfortunately, and until we start really doing our job and investigating it, it's not going to change. And it's incumbent on law enforcement to do that.
Well, you got to get somebody who's going to have a big enough support and backing and maybe some big enough balls, because let's face facts. If your friends are the ones who are investigating you, how are they going to investigate you?
Yeah.
You know, they're given the blessing to do what they got to do. We'll do what we got to do. I mean, everybody knows how the game's played. And unfortunately, when shit does hit the fan, who's on the hook? Is the patrolman in the field, the supervisor of that patrolman in the field? and people want to ask questions, the administration just goes, it's not us. Well, hold on a second.
What you're kind of referencing there, I think of the term, the one term that I hate the most that I hear from police chiefs and everybody is the word transparency. And I'll tell you why I hate that word. If you have to tell people you're being transparent, you're not being transparent. In and of itself, just being transparent should show, right? So, working with, I don't know what the investigation that they're investigating, but, it's just so politically motivated nowadays working. You have a council member that interferes with the work that they're doing. That's not just big agencies. That's small agencies too. I come from a small agency. You still see it in some sense. In a small agency, they can't transfer you to another bureau. They can't hide you somewhere else. So the discipline can change. So, my advice is like to cops that, they get upset, they get pissed off with administration or what's going on in the city or the council. So they may say something that can spark an investigation. Just follow your policy, look at it and follow it. And then remember too, that what cops don't realize is that your First Amendment rights as a cop while you're working and while you're representing the agency can be restricted. They absolutely can be restricted. So just follow your policy and, get good legal advice if you're in one of those situations where whatever this investigation is, just get some outside legal advice to figure out what the hell's going on.
Well, the guy who reported it also obviously had major concerns of, them coming to look at him. And yeah. I said, well, you could guarantee that we're not absent having a judicial order to turn it over.
Yeah, you don't have to cooperate. Yeah.
Let's go into the toxicity of a police agency, knowing that this exists where you work and how that affects the mind and the motivation. You guys are clearly clinicians in the sense of mental health and therapy. What does that do to somebody when they work at a place that's so corrupt and it's so negative and there's no support for the men and women in the field? Maybe you can elaborate on that, Dr. Todd and Rob Swayze.
It kills them. And I don't mean figuratively. I mean physically. When you are out on the streets fighting the negativity and the corruption, and then you've got it in your own agency, where do you go? There's no safety. There's no safe place to be for that officer or deputy. That's where really it's tough. And I'm just going to speak from my own experience. I was put in that position where there was misconduct that has gone on at the highest level. And I found out about it. And, you're at a place at that point that what do you do? And look, what were we sworn to do? Yeah. We weren't sworn to say, well, this group of people, you go ahead and you enforce a law on, but this people you don't. And it's not easy, but you have to put your head on the pillow at the end of the night and you have to look yourself in the mirror for the next 40 years. I made the choice to say something and speak up about it. And I was actually later called in by DA investigators, one who I knew, who actually told me at one point, hey, Todd, I want you carrying a gun with you at all times now. And if you hear something at your house, I don't want you going out and investigating on your own. I want you to call the police, call 911 to get them out there. And for the first time in my life, it was like I was in a movie. And I said, so you're telling me that I need to be fearful of people wearing the badge? And he said, yes.
Yeah, what I know Todd's story, and without getting too deep into it, it turned into federal indictments, federal prison. People went to jail. People, elected officials lost their jobs. It was a mess. But when you're talking about this work toxicity, Dennis, it also translates in how we provide service to the community. And Todd and I, we've both been cops. We've also had to utilize the services of police agencies and police officers. And when you have an officer or multiple officers that you're talking to address a situation for you, then they treat you like complete and utter horseshit. It's likely because it's the example that they're getting from their administration. The toxicity, it builds up and you're basically telling your rank and file, hey, I'm the chief, I'm the boss, I'm the city council member, I'm going to treat you like shit. So it's okay to treat the community like shit. So it kind of transfers all the way down the line. So it's, you know, it just, it creates just an environment that you don't even want to go to work anymore. I don't know, but I know Todd's situation, and it was, it actually affected our entire county. There were all kinds of people pulled in from all over the county where, again, and offline, we can probably give you more details on it because it can go on for days, but people went to prison. Sheriffs lost their jobs, elected officials, you know, it was a total mess. But there's this push, you know, they talk about transparency. There's this push in the agency too that, you know, if you know something about an administrator doing something wrong, don't say anything, because if you do, you're going to be transferred. You're going to be on the chopping block. If you're an at-will employee, you're going to be out of a job. There's this fear within the agency that it starts to just kind of overtake everything. And I think that's what happened in Todd's agency, not with Todd, but I knew deputies at the time that were there that could have and should have said things, but they feared they were going to lose their job.
And again, if you don't say something, then you stay in this and you live with it. And if you're going to do that, then you really have no business complaining. Mm-hmm. Because you made a choice to stay in this now and not say anything. And is it hard to say something? Yes. Are you going to go through difficulties? Yes. But you do that out on the streets. You said, I will give my life. But yet I'm not going to do something here. That's irrational. The problem is with law enforcement nowadays is nobody goes back and rereads their oath. You know, we have the police officer the code of ethics. When is the last time that an officer went back and read the police officer code of ethics? They should be doing that in a roll call once a year. And I don't know, do officers forget that? We held up our hand. Go back and look at what we held up our hand that we swore we would do. And that means anybody. That means within our own organization. But you're not going to clean up an organization until people start acting. You're not going to clean up the political side of the corruption until people start acting. And that's one of the things I'm trying to garner is we as collectively, you think about it, all the law enforcement officers in the United States of America, if you started banding together and say, we've had enough. We are going to protect our citizens against this corruption. There is nothing that they will be able to do, you know, safety in numbers.
The issue that I see with this, Todd, is though we haven't given a good example of what is right. I mean, we all know what is right and what is wrong, but when we've mixed that story up, we've mixed those signals up, you got new guys coming in and they don't know what is right or wrong anymore because they have to respond to whatever political pressure they have, whatever internal agency pressure they have. And so they're making calls or making judgment calls or making decisions to act or not act because the environment they're in, and they don't know if it's a good environment or if it's a bad environment. An example, you know, I investigated crimes against children for many years. You know, the child that is abused in their home and only given a certain amount of food every day doesn't know that that is wrong because they've never experienced anything else. And I think that the situation we have in our culture, in our law enforcement culture, it is the pendulum has swung to that point where the young people, they don't know anything different. And some of the older people allow that to be perpetuated because they have their own agenda, their own ideas and where they want to be and what they want to do.
I just want to say in here to not misinterpret what's being said. And what I mean by that is people think that they kind of get these two things confused. They think that police and a code of ethics allows for zero mistakes. So if you're somebody who's seeing a mistake, something that was not intentional, not malicious in and of itself, your captain makes a mistake, your lieutenant makes a mistake, your sergeant makes a mistake. A mistake can be forgiven. As a matter of fact, I would argue that most police mistakes should be forgiven. And a lot of times they are. What was the intent of the officer? Why we have qualified immunity? What did the court say regarding qualified immunity? So these mistakes are a very hard job to do. People get really confused on mistakes versus intention. If the intention was correct, but the mistake was made, I think police should get a pass. There should be culpability in some sense in that, hey, are we training? Are we going to, let's take this as a lesson learned. Let's adjust, let's change. but to have severe repercussions. Now, continuous flagrant misconduct is very different. So I don't want people who are newer to this being like, oh, I saw my captain like accidentally take a pen home. He needs to be right. I saw him stopping and working out at his gym and he's supposed to go right home with his car. Like that's not, that's ridiculous. That's not like somebody who's trying to, you know, be a horrible human being. That's not the point of that. It might be convenient. There's a lot of reasons, but a council member or whatever it may be, allegedly, who is continuously, according to this person's report, interfering with active shooting investigations. That wasn't a mistake. He didn't wander into it because his cousin was injured and he ran into the house by accident and like screwed up the crime scene, but he's a council member, but he didn't mean, this is somebody who's showing up and preventing police from investigating criminals and crimes. It's flabbergasting. And I'm not surprised because 18 years ago when I was in the district for the brief time that I was, I heard the same thing. And I'm going to read some excerpts to you guys and then we can unpack some of these things that I've received. Here's this one. Have we done Memphis yet? I left a little over a year ago, but I still work in the area and have a lot of friends that are on. It's terrible. There are at least one shooting daily, oftentimes multiple. They can't hire anyone, but that's not all bad because they can't equip the officers they've got now. At one time, we got down to 8 working cars from my entire precinct, 4 of which were barred from other stations. I worked a midnight shift and multiple times it was just me and a guy with less than a year on to handle 3 of the busiest beats in the city. The jail is so broken and it's not worth arresting people because it takes 4 to 5 hours to book someone just for them to be ROR'd before you get back to your ward. Admin is just out for themselves. Most of them couldn't tell you what PC is. They try to dirty cops files to keep them from getting hired elsewhere. And I've seen this a lot.
Yeah.
Promotion to sergeant is 8+ years. A bid to anything besides patrol is 10+ years. This new DA is just going to make it worse. I don't know how these guys are there still doing it. People don't realize, and why I'm saying these things publicly to my own detriment is people don't realize what it's like to be a cop in these circumstances. It's like you probably have better circumstances sometimes in foreign countries under military orders. No bullshit, right? Because maybe there you have the equipment you need and some support that you need.
Yeah.
Literally, these men and women are, you want to know why there's a hiring issue? You just have to look around a little bit. There can be a solution. And it really goes back to the top end politicians who are wanting change, da da da, blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't know what the resolve is. You're just making stuff up for your political agenda. There's been no change. Yeah. The only people employing change are those who took it upon themselves, myself and several other police training companies and influencers, to start the change ourselves because we're so desperate for it and we're getting almost no help from politicians. Not all the time, right? We know that DeSantis is certainly a police advocate. But overall, you can't talk out of one side of your mouth and expect something else to happen on the other side.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these politicians don't have a freaking clue what the hell's going on in this world. You know, they get into city council, whatever it is, they become governor. They don't have any background. And you have, you know, hopefully by the time this thing airs, the former governor of New York minimizing and mitigating the crime in the city, suggesting that it's not that big of a deal. They don't have a freaking clue. Or they have this view of what they think it should be, this little nirvana. It kind of reminds me, you know, back in Oakland, maybe a year ago, they were hiring these, what do they call them? Violence interrupters in Oakland. They were hiring violence interrupters because we wanted to change how the police did things because the police were being seen more as the violent perpetrator. And so they hired these violent interrupters. And during the first press conference on this, it was done outside. In the middle of the press conference, while they're talking about how our violence interrupters are going to stop this, they get robbed right in the middle of it on camera. They don't have a clue. They're being pushed and pressured from this ideation of what other people they claim want. But if you really look at it, it's only about 10, not even 10%. I would say it's probably maybe 5% of our population that you see out on the street corners yelling and screaming. Even when you look at the Black Lives Matter events, if you go to those things, if you see them, it's probably very small population people of color are there. It's very small when you consider the population of the city or in the communities, but yet we're creating our agendas and our policies and our procedures based upon this, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5% of people that are yelling and screaming. And these politicians don't have a freaking clue. You know, this whole no bail thing, you know, somebody goes in, they get arrested, they get released with no bail, they murder somebody the next day. That is completely swept under the rug. Nobody wants to talk about it. Why? Because it doesn't garner votes. So, you know, it's unfortunate that our police agencies have become so politicized. You know, and we've had, in my little tiny city, we've had council members that try to interject, but we've been able to push them back and say, you know what, unless you want to be put on a witness list for being at this crime scene, I suggest that you walk away. But there's a lot of pressure. And if you're that cop that's sitting out on a perimeter, you know, guarding a murder scene, and you've been on for maybe 6 months, because usually it's the youngest guy that gets the shittiest job, which means getting stuck in front of the crime scene for 2 or 3 days. How are you going to be able to tell the mayor or the council member, sir, you can't come in here without some kind of repercussion, or at least feeling like you're going to get the repercussion?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to the letter that you read, Dennis. And I really do feel for the officers when they say, hey, I make this arrest, I take them to jail, and they're back out on the streets before I even get out of the jail. And that is very frustrating. However, we lose sight of what we're supposed to be doing. And irregardless, if they get left out of the jail before you get out of there or not, when you make that arrest, from the time you make that arrest and you take them to jail and they have to go through that process and then they get out of jail and they've got to walk back home or wherever they're going, in that amount of time, how many crimes have you saved that this person isn't out on the streets victimizing people? And if you choose, because, well, the political system or the is not helping us, or that the criminal justice system isn't helping us, and you choose not to make those arrests, then you're part of the problem at that point. You're not part of the solution. You are part of the problem. So don't bitch about something if you're part of that problem. Still make those arrests, still take them to jail. Hell, you get paid by the hour. You got to be there for 10, 12 hours. What's it matter? Okay, that's number one. You signed on. Part of your job for them to pay you is taking reports. So you got to write paper. That's part of your job. That's like me saying, well, I don't want to do therapy with people. No, that's what I signed on for. And the other thing too is, look at it as job security. You guys got plenty of job security out there. Okay, so get back to your roots, get back, stop focusing on them and focus on you and focus on what you like to do and what you love to do. And if it's taking bad guys to jail, keep taking them to jail. You are saving every person you take off that street for hours, you're saving from them victimizing somebody else. So you're doing your part, and you can look yourself in the mirror and say, I don't give a fuck about that DA. Okay, not prosecuting these cases, but at least I know I did it right. And I can put my head on my pillow over that.
You know, Todd, that's a good point, because, you know, we our reactive policing, especially in this area in California, and I think it's around the country. I don't know, Dennis, you can probably tell me, but we are, we're not proactive anymore. It's all reactive. And part of that is the mindset. You mentioned the DA that, I mean, I've heard it in my own agency. Oh, you know what? They're never going to file the case, so why make the arrest? So we have to kind of get out of this mindset of this negativity. And like Todd just said, just do your job. It's not really my place or the officer's place or anybody else's business what the DA decides to do afterwards. As long as you do the right job, you're doing the right thing, and you're doing the best you can do, do it. And, you know, this podcast, sometimes we speak of the negativity within the industry. I have to say this, even though there's negativity in the industry, we do a really good job when we focus on the people that are most important, that's the community. So all that other bullshit that's going on in the agency, yeah, it creates a mess, it creates anxiety, it creates all kinds of issues. But just know that at the end of the day, if you're doing the right thing and you feel good about what you've done and you haven't broken any laws and you've done it ethically, it doesn't matter what that city council member, the court, or anybody else has to say, because you did the right thing. And so even though there's negativity and sometimes what we say, it's worth it. The mission is worth it. What we do is worth it. And I can honestly say that we make a difference. Law enforcement officers mm-hmm. make a difference in people's lives. And it could be as something as simple as helping somebody cross the street, but we do make a difference. So don't get so wrapped up in all of that negative shit that's going on around you and in your agency. Stay focused to what you have signed on to do.
I'm going to just jump in and say that, one, to address your previous question, are there proactive agencies around? Yeah, everywhere. Even in states that are what you consider to be liberal. I ran into Washington guys recently. And they're like, yeah, we're still getting at it. I'm like, really? And they're like, yeah, oh yeah, we're fucking it up. Like in Seattle or Portland, or it's Oregon, sorry. But you know, in Seattle, we don't go near that place, but like on the out, like it's a big state. I hear from guys in California, you know, in the LA area, sure. But we got one of our new instructors coming on. He's in San Diego. I don't want to go into too much detail of where he works. They're on a 14-man interdiction team. They're knocking down loads like fucking every single day. And I get a lot of emails and messages from men and women in California like, hey, we're not like the fuckheads down in the LA area or Orange County. Like, come one county south, go a couple counties north. Like, we're out here getting it. We get very jaded on the things we see very locally. No different than watching some of these anti-police organizations. There's 10, 11 million people in the state of New Jersey alone.
Yeah.
What are you getting at an event? 100, 200 people. So when you say 3%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%, I would argue it's less than 1%. And I can almost prove that.
Yeah.
You know, there's, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of people in the United States. I don't know if that was 370 million people,
something like that.
Yeah, it's somewhere in that ballpark. Did we see 368 million people or 369 million people out there? Or even a million out of that, or 3.6? No, we probably saw a couple thousand people throughout the country over the course of time, spread thin throughout the country. And these politicians are, and there's obviously a much bigger reason why all these things went on, why they pushed it. And, you know, I actually was telling a story. I went to vote today and I was in the booth and the proctor there had said, I haven't seen this many people turn out for voting in my whole time. I've been doing this for 30 years. It's like a presidential election. And I yelled from the booth. I went, people are pissed. Mm-hmm. And when I came out, the lady goes, well, that wasn't very nice to say. I said, people are pissed. People are fucking pissed. That's why we are here. So that's why I'm here. People are pissed. They've had enough of the insanity. They've had enough. But proactive policing is alive and well. And I'm telling you, we have the proof to show that, one, it works. Two, I would actually argue that it gets people to like the police more.
I agree.
Restores faith in it.
Absolutely.
Right? Pretextual stops are significantly important. And, you know, they kind of pitch them in these liberal news outlets. Like, they're used to target people of color, really? Because we have a story, and you could listen to one of the podcast episodes, where a gentleman put down the ticket book, opened his eyes, and pretextually selected a vehicle and prevented a 9 and a 12-year-old from being sold on the black market who were previously kidnapped only a few hours earlier. Or the two cops in Detroit that saw something that didn't look right in a car, pretextually selected that vehicle and rescued, I think, 3 or 4 children who were kidnapped. It was December 21st of last year, so 2021, who were kidnapped from a bus stop by a crazy lady. And they intervened, pretextually selected that car. She went through the stop sign, creating a motor vehicle violation, giving them the constitutional justification to stop the car, and children were rescued. And people are like, oh, it's not worth it. How the fuck is it not worth it? Yeah. You think those kids were out there protesting against you? You think you have the fucking right to not have motivation or the why to show back up again? You think they deserve you having a bad day so they can get kidnapped, raped, and killed because you're having a fucking bad day? You don't want to do this job? Then fucking leave, right? Yeah. We'll figure it out what we got.
Where you're getting the push to not be as proactive, because there is that push. We see it. I mean, you got governors like up in Michigan and in New York. You have this push to let's try to mitigate some of the proactive stuff. You know, let's just be all friendly here and just be submissive to whoever's out there. It's coming from that level. And when your chiefs and your captains, they start adopting that behavior of, hey, you know, the one thing that I have is, yeah, I've got background and experience in police work. I've got education in criminal justice. I've also got an education in social work. So I understand the social dynamics. So one thing these politicians don't have is they really don't have the education on either. So they're just making an opinion and assumption. But when you start having your administrators start to minimize that, hey, let's not be so proactive out there. Let's not stop so many cars. But then on the other side, you're going to get written up because you're not writing enough tickets this week. It's bullshit. What you need is you have to have really good sergeants that are willing to step up for their people and willing to tell the bosses, hey, bosses, this is what we signed up for. This is what we're going to do. If you don't like what I'm doing, discipline me for doing it. Oh, you can't because I'm following the law and I'm following policy.
I'm just going to jump in real quick because I don't want to lose this thought. I don't think it's anything new, right? I mean, there was 21 years ago when I got into this gig, you heard the stories. They don't want us doing anything here, right? No traffic stops, no problems. Less traffic stops, less problems. That's not how we're supposed to be seeing this thing. And we could all agree. That's not how it works. It's not what a law enforcement police officer is supposed to do, is just ignore. And I just always go back to this story. Guy took this class, one of my classes, and he said, my chief says, oh, you're always finding trouble. And my response to him was, if you're not finding trouble, what kind of police officer are you? What are you supposed to do as a cop? Find trouble. That's the fucking job. There's no better definition of what am I supposed to do at the first and foremost is protecting people, law enforcement, and finding trouble before it finds them. And when you tell your police agency, your officers, hey, we need tickets. Don't worry about intervening with fucking criminals, people actually committing crimes, people who are after children and beating their wives and all this other stuff. Don't get involved in that stuff. We don't want those headaches. The victims suffer. It's bullshit.
Yeah, but the more problems that you find, it makes the leaders, the managers, the politicians have to submit to the idea that maybe we have a problem that we've been trying to ignore or that we're telling the community we don't have. And so there is that push. There is that push from that higher administration or from the political side of don't find too much trouble, because if you do, then we have to admit that there's a problem. We talked about it last week in the podcast. You know, the agencies that say we don't have any problems with mental health because our officers don't get any help. Well, just because they don't get any help doesn't mean they don't have any problems, you know, but it's kind of the same concept. You know, if you go out and you start digging things up and you start kicking in doors and you start pulling people over and you're taking people to jail, God forbid that this little tiny city out in the middle of Orange County, where we have like zero crime rate, you know, Irvine, which is, you know, it's the pristine city. We may have to admit that we have a problem, and politically that doesn't help. And, it's frustrating. It's frustrating.
You know, I think that some of the issue is that police officers have never been victims themselves. So they don't understand. I've been a victim and I've had to call the police. And when they came out and trying to blow me off, trying to kiss off the situation multiple times, they knew I was a police officer. So if they're going to do that to me, they're doing it to everybody out there. And, you know, I don't want anybody to ever have to be a victim, but if officers were victims, I think they'd make better police officers.
Yeah,
because they understand. And they go out there and, you know, I don't want to take a report, you know, a report that's going to take them 30 minutes to do. It's a checkbox report or whatever. They don't want to take it, so they try to kiss it off. And you know what? You've never been a victim. That's important to that citizen. So treat it that way. And I think that they don't understand. They've never had to feel what it was like to be a victim of a crime.
I'll tell a very brief story. I know I've told it before, and I don't want to get too detailed on it, but we were getting new fleet vehicles. And at that time, I probably told this on the podcast before, we were there. I think a lot of new options had come out. The Chargers were out. I think there was a company that made its own police cars. And what I remember distinctly about it was you could actually drain the trunk, where you could like have plugs throughout the car for like blood and vomit. You could spray the car out and it would like drain out the bottom, so you didn't have to like detail it. And then there was Caprices were coming back, right? All these things were back on, you know, this must've been like 2006, 2007, something like that. I was fairly new at my agency, maybe a year or two on at the last agency I was at. And I remember seeing somebody who was in charge of that. I said, hey, I know that we're getting new cars. You guys are getting like 17, 18 new cars. What are we getting? And that person's response was a Crown Vic. I said, but why though? I thought like we were going to, because I actually got asked in the back. I got brought into, it was one of the first times they ever consulted me about what my thoughts were on things. I was very proactive. And I said, you know, I'd like to see cars that were, here's what we're experiencing. These Crown Vics, albeit they work great, they start, They're great in the snow. Like, they're great, except when you have to get somewhere quickly because they're fucking slugs. 225 horsepower on a 4,000, 5,000 pound vehicle. It's like a go-kart compared to, we're getting dusted by, at that time, six-cylinder Honda Accords. They're killing us. We can't keep up with them. So I said, you know, these Caprices, I understand, do 0 to 60 in like 4 seconds. Like, that's a big deal for us when we're pursuing cars. So anyway, I saw this administrator and I said, well, that's a shame that we're getting Crown Vicks, huh? I was hoping we would get like something really fast. And he responded by saying, well, if it's up to me, we'd have all Durangos. And I said, you can't chase in a Durango. You ever take a turn in one of those Durangos and you flip the fuck? This is like, again, in the mid 2000s. I go, they're not chase rated. They're horrendous. You guys ever drive those things?
Yeah.
So, he said, well, chases are a thing of the past. I said, I'll concede that in some sense, in some agencies, and I'm in my like mid-20s basically talking shit, that that's probably true. I go, and certainly you can, you're in the position to make a policy that prevents us from chasing. But first of all, we're still chasing. I don't know where the fuck you're at. We're still, I don't know where, like, you realize we chase like 2 times a day. Like, we're pursuit known town. Two, I said, let's say you take away chases and there's a policy, it's very strict, zero chase policy. What happens when they shoot a cop or when we have a kid that maybe is related to you is kidnapped? What do we do then? Right? When we have to chase them, when the policy's out the window because we're trying to now protect imminent death or serious injury, we're trying to rescue a child who was stolen out front of the elementary school. And now, on the decision you made to give us Durangos, we can't, and that person will die. And I'll just make it, let's say it's one of your kids. What do we do then? And I'll never forget, this person was literally speechless for the first time in his life because somebody had actually said to him, you're wrong. I know that you're the boss, but you're fucking wrong, dude. That's a horrible decision. You know what? You don't want us to chase. That's great. But we have to have the ability to chase. You don't want us to shoot through walls with AR-15s. Well, and that was, you know, you guys were around a long time. Nobody had, we talked about this last time. Nobody had AR-15s in the mid 2000s. They just started bringing them out. Mm-hmm. And now everybody's got them. Because it took how many people to get killed for us to say, we at least need to have these. I don't hope we never have to use them, but we at least need to have these things. It's the same thing with the cars. I watched an episode of The First 48. I think it was like Tulsa or something. They're chasing around this female murder suspect, but they're in like Chevy Luminas. And like, there's like 3 pursuits they lose every single time because you hear the 4-cylinder or the 6-cylinder engines. They can't, they're like, she's gone again.
So what happens when you work for that agency and you decide that, you know, we're not going to pursue, but then the decision is, hey, there's that 12-year-old that's getting kidnapped. I'm going to pursue. And you pursue. What's going to happen to that officer? What discourages them from doing it? Or worse yet, you say, nah, I'm not going to. I'm not going to take the chance. My policy says this. They're going to fire me. You're almost saying, I don't give a shit what happens to that 12-year-old. You got to make a decision as a cop.
As a human being.
As a human being, more importantly, yes. What decision do you make? Because ultimately, if it goes well, you know, somebody's going to take the credit and it's all great. If it goes to shit, you're gone. They're going to string you up and they're going to go after you every way they can. And they're going to try to mitigate anything else to suggest that you did the right thing. These no pursuit policies, they're fucking dangerous. They really are. And there's agencies that have them. I believe it's Chicago now. You can't get in foot pursuits, right?
That's right.
It's dangerous, you know?
Dude, how about this real quick? I just want to say something. I was watching a TikTok reel before, just quickly. And a guy was driving a Ford Mustang. And he was had a camera on the back of his car. And he was dusting. I did not want to say, because I got to imagine this is going to be some kind of internal affairs investigation with the video services. But he's got two cops. This is the danger of no pursuit policies. He's got two cops in a doubled up car chasing him through the streets of this city, no lights, no sirens, almost hitting other cars because they know they can't pursue and they know they have to pursue this guy. So literally they're running code without any lights or sirens on, chasing this dude at over 100 miles an hour because they know as soon as they activate the lights and sirens, they're going to get terminated. And that's it. And, you know, we've got to come to this Mendoza line of some give and take here. You can't just have a zero pursuit policy. You've got to try to take into account of what are we, you know, we got to make some judgment calls here. And unfortunately, they had one in Newark, New Jersey. They tried a zero pursuit policy. They brought it back. We had it in Jersey. Attorney General's office made it basically a zero pursuit policy. Every fucking, I talked about this last time. Every chief and prosecutor went down to the state and said, you better change this shit. and right now. And thank God they did, because all of a sudden, could you believe it? Stolen cars have declined dramatically because we can now pursue and apprehend. Shocker.
I've heard story after story after story of agencies that have pursued policies you can pursue, but a sergeant will, they automatically in their own mind have a zero pursuit policy. You get on the radio and say, I'm in pursuit, sergeant will immediately cancel your pursuit because they've created their own policy.
Yeah, they're fucking spineless. That's why.
What does that do for your agency? You're telling your cops, don't do your job.
You know, I sit back, I listen to all this, and it's not an easy answer. However, I really do believe that in law enforcement, we are fragmented. And I've said this over and over again. We need to have these unions and associations across the United States of America start banding together and start saying, now, you know, for instance, you know, being out here in California, these California associations and unions need to get together and in number saying, you know what, California police are now saying, we've had enough of this. Okay. And we need to get that out to the citizens as well, because we're even fragmented ourselves from the citizens. And I'm not trying to get political or anything, but I'm just going to use this as an example. This wearing mask, no mask bullshit out in public for this COVID stuff. When police started enforcing this on citizens over something that's not a crime, we fragment ourselves from them. Instead of saying, we stand with you. When we say we stand with you and we support you citizens, then they're going to turn around and support us. And if the police in uniform stand out there and say, we've had enough, the citizens you're going to see are going to start coming behind you. But they're not going to do it because they're afraid of you right now. They're afraid of you. And we have allowed this to happen, because we haven't stood up and said no.
Todd, I was going to ask you a question because you talked about that. We're standing with you. I just want your opinion on something. Give me your opinion on what you think when you have the police chief decide to go out into that Black Lives Matter group, stand with them, not only stand with them, but kneel with them in uniform. What are they signaling to their people and the community that they should be serving? Because you talk about standing with them, but we've seen it time and time again throughout this country. Police chiefs walking out in front of these riotous movements and standing next to these people. And I know you have an opinion on it. So what's your thought?
When chiefs do that, they're doing it for their self-serving purpose. That's why they're doing it. Now, to me, the correct way would be doing it is, okay, I'm gonna allow everybody to have their beliefs. That's okay. But instead of grandstanding it, set up a meeting with these people, okay? And talk to them before or after or whatever. But this is grandstanding for whatever their purpose is. And, you know, you can have whatever belief you want. That's the United States of America. That's okay. And that's what we are supposed to stand behind is the United States Constitution. But, you know, if a law enforcement chief would just go out there and say that our city is policed by the United States Constitution of America. I have not heard one chief say that, or maybe there is that I've forgotten about.
Well, it's because you guys are in fucking California, but I'm telling you, like these guys in Florida, these sheriffs down here with the good support there, they're, you know, honestly, even in places that you don't think they are, there's chiefs in New Jersey who are like,
okay,
you don't care.
And Dennis, to go to that point, there are sheriffs and chiefs doing that, right? So if they can do it, it can be done anywhere. And again, where is the votes of no confidence? And I know they're being done, but where is the department taking more action? And sometimes, you know, again, I'm going to go back to our associations and unions. You know, a lot of these guys that are association presidents, I've seen it. I know you guys have seen it. They want to get promoted, so they're going to do and not do what needs to be done because they don't want to ruin their career. Well, then you know what? Get the hell out of your position, and don't tell me, "Well, I'm afraid to do this because I might not make sergeant." But you're going to tell me you're going to go out and die in the streets for somebody? Bullshit. Bullshit. You're a coward. You take a position, take the position. You need to know what those ramifications are before you take the position. I take the position of association president. This may affect my career. So if you've got a problem with that, don't take it. Put the person in there that's going to.
You know, the reason why I bring up that chief of police standing out in front of that crowd of the Black Lives Matter, because it reduces, not only does it reduce the confidence within the within the agency, you have lost your people when you do that. It truly reduces the confidence of the community because, Dennis, you said less than 1%. You're probably right. When you're going to grandstand and stand in front of less than 1% of the community for a cause that actually is not even, I won't say it's an illegitimate cause. I will say it's a legitimate cause, but it's based on incorrect data, incorrect information. But when your chief of police stands in front of that large group and walks out and then kneels with these groups, you've lost confidence of your agency. You've lost confidence in your community. You got no business being in that position or that role.
And you've lost confidence with that group that you're doing that with.
Absolutely.
Because now they go, look at this weak person.
Yeah.
They say that. I've seen it. That's psychological. That's what they wanted. See, we got them right where we want them.
What's the mission?
So I'm not saying you've got to go the other way and be so tough, but don't submit. What are we submitting to? And when I say that, it doesn't mean like, you know, if they have this cause and they have a right to do this, okay, you have a right to do this. I have no problem with that as long as you stay within our rules and laws. If you don't, well, then we're going to take it from there. That's not hard math to do here, folks. That's common sense. And again, the people that do that are grandstanding. They're doing it for self-gain. And they think that they're helping, but all you're doing is you're emboldening now that group.
It actually doesn't calm the situation at all.
It doesn't. It actually magnifies it.
It totally magnifies it in many ways. But one way is you also are telling your own people, hey, when it starts to riot tonight, don't do anything because I stand with this crowd, not with you.
How about this? When anything happens, don't worry. You can't depend on me to have your back. I have no spine. I have no morals. I have no values. I have only self-interest. So now going to a job that needs somebody opposite of me to ensure that when you make a mistake, I will be there to explain what happened and confidently stand by your side. Yeah. What does it say to the people? What it says is, you know what? I remember hearing that guy in Florida talk who said he supported his people. I'm going to apply there. You know, in the group, our Facebook group, literally probably 10 times a day, all I see, and I don't approve them all because we're not the fucking how do I get hired group. We would dilute the purpose of the group if we did that all day. But over and over again, you see, hey, guys, NYPD here transferring to Florida. What do I need to know about this? Hey, guys, cop from New York here transfer. Hey, guys, cop from California looking to go to Arizona. Hey, guys, cop from Oregon looking to go to Texas. These people are like, yo, let's just leave this whole fucking state. I'll just go somewhere else. And what's crazy is some of the most supported agencies are some of the least paid agencies yet. You still have people lining up. I actually asked recently, you guys have any recruitment issues? And they said, they would be a lot worse if we didn't have this guy. And one of those faces you see, Mark Lamb, the American sheriff, he doesn't have problems getting people, right? People want to work for that guy. And he's trying to work, get raises for these guys. They make significantly less than 55, 60 minutes north. And yet we have one of those pending posts from Phoenix PD where they make a lot more money than everybody else. And just like, it's not worth it to work here anymore. It's not worth it.
Yeah. Everybody to each their own of what they need to do with their careers. However, I don't think running is the answer. If you're just simply running to run, fixing is the answer because you could go to whatever other police. And I've seen it. I've seen people in our own area at one point in time, Huntington Beach Police Department was the place to go. Everybody was trying to get there and people were leaving their departments and going there. Well, fast forward about 7 years, then everybody's fleeing from there because of the administration and city council problems that they were having. So that can change at any point. I don't think running necessarily is the answer. We need to come up with fixes.
Yep.
And that is what changes things. If we all, you know, let's go back to 1776. Okay. If we all in America, they would have just ran. Let's just go find another place. What would America have been? It wouldn't have been. But we didn't. We stood and we said, no, we've had enough. We're not going to do this anymore. And we're going to take a stand. And we fixed it. Hey, guys, I've got to get going to this meeting. I cannot miss it.
Got it.
So I apologize.
We'll have you back on, Dr. Todd Langus.
Dennis, I really enjoy doing this with you. I think you got a great cause. I really appreciate and bless it. You asked me to be back on. So,
and the sentiment is likewise. And you know, it's interesting when you start open your mouth, you'd be surprised how many people come forward looking to join together and join the fight. And it's a just cause. It's worthy.
Well, this is where we're at. We are in a fight now. It is. We need to fight to retake the streets. And I don't just mean that just out in the streets. I mean, that encompasses all this other crazy BS that's going on. We need to retake our cities. And we need to fix things. And there are fixes and there are answers.
Sure.
And it's going to take work to do it. And it's going to take risk to do it. But hey, that's what we signed on for. So let's do it. And I'm there to help.
Todd, if you're any more late, it's your own fucking fault. Don't blame us.
All right, Todd, I'll give you a call later. We'll chat later.
I'll see you guys. Bye.
All right, guys.
We'll talk later.
Stay safe.
Bye. Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.